Samson Delilah, this particularly this production, is probably the largest production that the San Diego Opera has ever done, as far as the sets are concerned, as far as the, just the sheer size.
This production is a co-production with San Francisco Opera and Lyric Opera of Chicago. It was designed by Doug Schmidt, I think sometime in the early 90s. And, of course, being built for San Francisco and Chicago, it's made to fit on their stage, which makes it a challenge to fit it onto ours. The challenge that we run into with shows that we get from these companies is that oftentimes they're too tall, too deep, too wide, and take up too much wing space. But we like to use the shows from those theaters, from those opera companies, because they're quality productions and they come with quality people. So we've learned over the years how to, you know, make certain adjustments in order to fit those sets into our stage. It's important for us that we prepare for everything as completely as we can, because by the time we hit the stage, we only really have the time in our schedule to do the things that we can only do on stage. So we really need to get all of our paperwork and our prep done well in advance.
It is a large grand opera, and it requires large forces. That's one of the reasons. And that that means chorus, and that means the ballet, and that means the singers, who can actually look the roles and sound and sing the music, which is very demanding.
With this production, to just show more colors in her going back, not to start that crescendo so soon.
Okay.
It demands three outstandingly strong and convincing singing actors. The bass baritone, who is the high priest, le grand prêtre, obviously the Delilah, who is a mezzo, and the Sanson, the Samson, who is a tenor, but a tenor of not the tenorino capacity, but a tenor of great stature and who has enough heft in the voice to cut through in the tessitura that the composer puts him and keeps him.
Personally, I think Samson, in a way, is a tragic individual. I think he's also an individual that we can, you know, gain inspiration from. I think he's, in a sense, every man who falls and learns to get up again and learns from his life lessons. He's a very complex individual, someone I think who was never quite sure how to handle the responsibility that was given to him. Ill at ease in his position, and one controlled by compulsiveness in a way. You know, acting, reacting as opposed to responding. I mean, he was a complex individual. the one thing he has not been able to walk away from. She's not the only woman he has been with, but she seems to be the one that he continues to return to. And I don't know if it's the mystery of it or the forbidden aspect of it, or if it's maybe the atmosphere in which she dwells, which is a very, wealthy environment for that particular time. Unfortunate.
This is my little daughter, Ella Thais. She may or may not engage with us during this chit-chat.
Last bar before the agitato. And one,
everyone knows, I think, today, if they are involved in music at all, the name Denise Graves, and she is our Dalila. She's an arrestingly beautiful woman who is regal and elegant, who will carry off this part just in the style, I'm sure, in which it was meant to be performed.
I think I only identify with her in terms of just being a woman and being a woman who has loved and being a woman who has loved in complicated situations. But I'm certainly not as measured and as calculating as she is. each partner that I have, each new production, each new conductor, and each new place that I'm working with, it shows me something different about it. I become a different Delilah with different partners because they move and touch me, Denise, the woman, and the character, Delilah, in very different ways that show me something different about myself and show me something different in the character and in the music. So I'm never bored, really. I think I'm only fatigued if I'm working with people who are not inspired themselves, who are not coming to the party with something. But that's not the case here on this production. I have a wonderful set of colleagues whom I hold in great esteem, and it's a pleasure to work with. So for me, it's a joy. I'm really excited. And you know, I know when it's good for me when I call my friends and say, you got to come see this. And I've done that already, so.
Greer has been with us here before, and we're happy to have him here again. He's an arresting figure and a very dynamic figure on stage, and possesses, again, the kind of heft in the voice that is needed to have the characterization and the menacing quality of this high priest.
The high priest is very much a manipulator in the whole opera, and also so is Delilah. And you see these two masterful people sort of meeting each other and trying to sort of one up one another. Early civilizations, the high priest was somewhat the center of the civilization, and it was a civilization based on agriculture. So if you had another god sort of nudge you out of the way, then your power, your wealth, it all gets sort of bumped out of the way. So he's there to make sure that it all stays the same. Nothing gets pushed out of the way.
In the office, we often refer to it as the Hollywood opera of this season, because it is like a Hollywood epic.
It's a Cecil B. DeMille. I mean, you know, as a matter of fact, I used a film of Cecil DeMille as a kind of a research, with Hedy Lamarr as Delilah and Victor Mature as Samson. And it's kind of fun because from that film, they have invented some kind of background relationship, which as good as any, because there really isn't that much background anyway. So I have kind of used some of the Cecil B. DeMille invented backgrounds, which he did for his film. So I thought that if you're there and it's down, that what you could do is pick it up then.
Oh, that's nice. Sure.
You see what I mean? Yeah. Of that kind of a...
Uh-huh.
Okay. You see what I mean? Finish it off in that mood of the l'amour, because otherwise then it looks a little tight. This opera was created first as an oratorio that actually, that Saint-Saëns created more, and then when you look at the first act, it's exactly the structure of an oratorio. There's a chorus and a solo line and a chorus and an aria and all that, and there's very little dramaturgical line through the whole thing. So let's just do this very slowly. And you guys hide where you're hiding. And you are right in smack center stage, okay? So he comes out. Now run after him. Grab him here, you two. You come from behind him. And slowly they drag you back, Clem, to the couch. They put you down. And that's it. A stage director has the responsibility of creating a dramatic development line through the whole piece. The second act is a little easier. The second act is more the operatic duet. It has an aria and a duet, and then another aria and a duet, and finale. It's more like a romantic opera of the 19th century. Okay? Can we now maybe do that all with the supers, with the music, please? A third act, then again we go back into the oratorio, because you've got the first scene of the third act, which is the tenor with a chorus, which is exactly a little bit like a Handel oratorios. And then the next one, again you have the chorus. But then, of course, then you have the ballet in the third act.
French grand opera always has ballet. And of course, we have ballet. We have a wonderful corps de ballet in this. We have the dances, a dance of the priestesses in the first act, which are the women of the ballet. And in the final third act, we have the amazingly, what shall I say, athletic and exciting and engaging dance, a corps de ballet at six couples, who are dancing the Bacchanal, the very famous Bacchanal.
The opera Samson and Delilah by Camille Saint-Saëns, the Bacchanal is part of the plot. Delilah herself is the high priestess, and she evokes this entire ritual. So it's very integrally part of the show. It's one of the ballets that you cannot cut. Of course, it's popular to try to cut ballets for budgetary reasons, and sometimes the ballet, of course, because it was insisted upon by the French public, sometimes the ballet stops the whole plot, and so in some cases it's better not to do the ballet. To make this ballet big in the tradition of French opera, it requires big lifts, big jumps. At one point, the principal girl who is the victim in the Bacchanal is really pretty much hurled from very high up, a very high lift in the men catch her. So it has to be big to fit on the scenes. These sets are so tremendously big that the ballet has to try to take its place so it's not diminishing on stage.
Also have, of course, the orchestration itself and the music of Saint-Saëns, who himself, as a composer, was probably one of the most accomplished and respected and facile composers of his time. Orchestration itself is extremely delicate at times, and then sometimes extremely strong. He makes great use of woodwind instruments in solo capacity, then joined by different. His use of instruments with each other is fascinating.
As smooth and as transparent and as absolutely French as you can make it. Two before M.
As I was discussing with a colleague the other day, there are certain chords and combinations of instruments where you could swear that it was a great organ chord on a massive pipe organ. And, of course, we know that Saint-Saëns was a phenomenal organist and highly respected in that capacity, and I believe was the organist for some almost 40 years at the Church of the Madeleine in Paris. So we have that. We have the liturgical aspect. There's the chorus, interestingly enough, of the Hebrews, of the Hebrew men, of the Hebrew slaves, which sounds so very French from the, curiously enough, from the liturgical mass side of things, at least to the ear. It sounds like a chant.
This entire show, Saint-Saëns used the chorus as he would have with any oratorio, that their purpose is there to sing great, and their job is to be there and to sound wonderful and sound like a great choir that is delivering all the text. This one, as with other operas, they're required to deliver different kinds of characters. In the opening scene, they're the tired Hebrews, they're the worn Hebrews, and they have, even in that, they're telling you how they feel, and they're telling you the emotions that they're feeling, but the way that they do it is through really incredible choral writing.
Thank you.
the writing often in this show is very transparent. It's sometimes very wordy. There are several sections, even in the final scene in the Bacchanal, where they have little prayers that they sing, which are not complicated musically, but they're just long strings of text. Because of the transparency of the writing, one voice goes astray, then it's very, very obvious.
This is what has struck me in this time and place. I am seeing and reading this score and the places it mentions with very different eyes. I look there and I see it says Gaza, or it says Palestine, or it talks about the Philistines or the Philistines. We are living in exactly a time which is reflected in this opera. And who knew back when this was composed that we would be sitting here today in 2007 again living the very subject of what's happening in Samson and Delilah.